Welcome to Wagon Wheel, the cricket podcast where we answer your questions on the game. It sounds weird, or it looks weird. It is weird. We are in the middle of changing from my office inside into the proper studio outside. There's teething problems. We're not sure the Wi-Fi is going to hold up, although, to be fair, we're not really sure that the Wi-Fi was going to hold up in the house half the time. So we're hoping that that works a little bit better. And you'll hear a bit of an echo. Partly it's because the studio isn't fully built, so there isn't actually that much stuff in here at the moment. And then also partly because we just haven't got all the sound dampening stuff that we need to put up right at the moment. But we will be working on all those sorts of things as we go ahead. More and more of that sort of stuff going. But it works. We'll have three different studio spaces to be able to record in. So this will be the normal one that you see for all the podcasts. And then we'll have another one for the whiteboard, blackboard type of stuff and drawing type of stuff. And then we'll have a proper studio at the other end. So it's going to be cool. It's just not there yet. And, you know, we're trying the 3G mobile at the moment or whatever it's called, 5G mobile. It's holding together, but with sticky tape. But we'll do the best that we can today, and we'll be trying to improve it every single day as we go ahead. I don't even have all my equipment out here. Like, I haven't plugged my microphone in, things like that. So we will fix things. We will fix my tongue, and we'll fix everything else. Anil says, would India play England this summer? Should they pick three seamers, Jadeja and Nitesh Reddy, or four frontline seamers, and just one out of those two? They'll definitely need Jadeja. If you have a five... bowler attack. I don't see the point in having no spinners at all. It just doesn't give you the flexibility that I think you require. Probably start with Nitesh, I would have thought, and see how it goes. The part of it depends on how England play, right? Like, if England are smacking the ball everywhere and going nuts, then you probably don't want a situation where you want a weaker fourth seamer. But my guess would be that is where they start. And that makes the most sense, I think, for me as well. Oh, just a reminder, if the questions we have here are from Patreon. So patreon.com, Good Areas Podcast. And at the end, if we have any time for, or if my office hasn't exploded, or my studio hasn't exploded, we'll do the rest there as well. MF Jim says, the ICC couldn't organize a piss up in a brewery. Very Australian phrase, that. Dictatorial powers have returned to fix the Champions Trophy. How would you proceed, President for Life, Kimber? I've said before, I don't think it's a particularly hard thing. I think the ICC, men and women, just need one tournament a year per gender. So you want cricket in the Olympics. I don't think you want it in the Commonwealth Games. I just don't think you need it in the Commonwealth Games. I'm not slandering the Commonwealth Games, although I am known to slander the Commonwealth Games. But yeah, I think you want a situation where it's in the Olympics. You have a 50-over World Cup, you have a 20-over World Cup, and I would probably just make it a 20-over Champions Trophy. That's probably how I would do it. Stop pissing about. If you're going to keep the Champions Trophy, and I think having one tournament every year makes sense, and then the Olympics is different to either of the World Cups, and the Champions Trophy is different again. 16-team knockout, if you wanted to, you know, we can go in 32-team knockout. Probably won't do that because of finances, but that's kind of the way that I would look at it. Rob says, how many balls can top mystery spinners bowl? In my mind, the theoretical maximum is 9 with a combination of off-spin, leg spin, top spin, back spin, no spin. Is that right or am I missing something? I'm trying to think. So, I mean, the arm ball is different than no spin because with the arm ball, you're actually trying to swing the ball a little bit. You've got back spin, which is kind of the undercutter. So I suppose that kind of counts. You've got flipper, you've got wrong-end, you've got doosra, you've got carom ball. But you've also, I think this is where I think it gets a little bit more interesting because you've got knuckleball, a standard knuckleball, then you've got an off-spinning knuckleball, you can also bowl a leg-cutting knuckleball, and you can probably bowl an out-swinging and in-swinging knuckleball. I think those are the majority. And then, but also, we've seen spinners bowl off-cutters rather than off-spinners before. So an off-cutter is certainly another ball. So that's up to 15, 16 already. You've also, there's not one kind of wrong-in. That's the way we talk about it. But there's the finger wrong-in. The finger wrong-in comes out of here. And then you've got I don't know if the other one has a little name, but the Imran Tahir Rashid Khan one, which is out of the little fingers. So let's call it the little finger wrong-in. That's tiny wrong-in. And then the normal wrong-in. You then have side spin on a wrong'un and overspin on a wrong'un. So there are multiple wrong'uns. There's more than one kind of leg spinner now too. Like if you look at what Rashid Khan, Ravi Bishnoi, there's someone else I'm missing on that list as well, Bowl. So we're up to about 2025, aren't we? Person McPherson face says, has there ever been a bowler's, has there ever been a player strike or owners, lockout in cricket, related to franchise cricket leagues? Has there ever been a player strike? So players, West Indies have gone on strike twice. Is any other, technically the Australian team went on strike in 1910-11. It wasn't the whole lineup, but they certainly went on strike. Who else has gone on strike? I can't think of anyone else. I think those are the only three off the top of my head. So I think that's right. Do franchise leagues have CBAs? I tried looking if the IPL has one, and it seemed like it didn't, which is odd to me. No. That's why the IPL players are massively underpaid, because they don't have a CBA. You know, in the subcontinent, unions and collective bargaining agreements aren't as big as they are in other parts of the world, and it's a thing that has held back players' wages a lot of recent times. You know, traditionally it was the amateur stuff, but now it's not really. It's the fact that they are collective bargaining together, and so they're not getting the most money out of these things. There have actually been strikes in, I reckon, a Masters League, certainly the Canadian League. I don't know if there's been any others, but there would have been certainly some smaller leagues where teams have just refused to go out and play in some of those league crickets. Oh, did I get the right one there? Neil says, could you please explain the process behind how the ECB awards test games to English venues? I believe Colin Graves became chairman to make sure that Headingley got done. I am only joking, Colin. I'm sure that you didn't do that. They've basically decided which are the test playing nations, test playing grounds, I should say. And then there's a bit of a, I wouldn't call it a bidding process, but I think you ask for what you want. And over a certain period of time, you would be able to get the vast amount of tests. What you might miss out, though, is might be an Indian test you want, or an Ashes test, or anything, a night, day-night test or whatever, just because it hasn't quite worked. I believe it's not really. And when you have, as I said, I'm not having a go at Colin Graves here, but it's a bit ridiculous when you have the chairman of the ECB is also the person who has loaned money to Yorkshire, and the only way for that money to really come back before the 100 sale or the actual entire team being sold was for Colin Graves to make sure that the ECB kept in the test matches. Even if he's completely beyond any ill doing, and I have no idea. I was more making fun of it because it's weird, but it's a conflict of interest. And so, you know, the way we know that the Welsh government play a more active part in trying to get games than some of the other places do. There are probably some places that have deserved games more than Wales have at times. The whole Durham thing is really, really weird. But yeah, it's a bit messy. It's not the most open thing. But there's, I can't remember what it is now, but there's 8 or 9 grounds that they have decided are international worthy, and about what 7 or 8 of those are considered test worthy. It gets tough though, because Lords, you know, do more than one test. Jane says, given the IPL teams already have head coaches, assistant coaches, batting coaches, bowling coaches, fielding coaches, what role do mentors play exactly? Asking in light of Kevin Beeson joining Delhi Capitals as a team mentor. Means he doesn't have to coach? It's a weird one. I think it was a way originally to keep people like Viv Richards around. There's an element of, during a tournament, you could make a very big argument that a batting coach actually doesn't help as much as you think it does. It's great to have them there, but batting coaches are probably much more useful over the entirety of the year than they are for, especially in smaller tournaments, a one-month tournament. IPL is a little bit different because it goes over 2 months. But I remember, I'm pretty sure Trent Woodhill said this, and I think he said it publicly, but he certainly told me. So sorry, Trent, if I'm throwing you under. But I think there was 1 year where he was a chance of going with the Australian team. I don't know if he was offered the job or not, but he was sort of saying, I've kind of worked with all these guys. They've got everything that they need, and they can phone me if there's an adjustment that they want to make or if there's something they want to work on. But he was sort of saying, within the battle, having Steve Waugh there was more handy. Now, Steve Waugh's not really a batting coach in the same way that Trent Woodhill is. Like, he hasn't spent his whole life the way, you know, or the vast majority of his life trying to do that sort of stuff. But in that moment, like there's the great conversation that Manus Labuschagne has with Steve Waugh, right? When Jofra is probably bowling his greatest ever spell. Sadly now, he might never bowl a spell better than that. But when he's bowling that great spell and Steve Waugh just goes, this is as hard as it's ever going to be for you. I don't think if Trent Woodhill says it, it's quite the same. So there is an element of the mentors being helpful. I think if you go back, you'll know how me and Bayram feel about mentors. There's a lot of people stealing a living with it. There are a lot of people who do a lot of work with it. You've also got to remember that not everyone wants to coach, but they still have a lot of knowledge that can be passed on. I don't see the point, really. I just think it's the problem with this term is it was used originally just to keep another legend around, because quite often the owners want to hang out with another legend. And so there are a lot of mentors who do nothing. And there are a lot of mentors that really, really help. So I don't want to slag off all the ones that do. But yeah, I would have certainly fought against any mentors when I was involved in a franchise. Ellie says, why don't Pacers ever try to do an arm ball instead of a cutter? That's outswing, man. An arm ball is basically just outswing. A cutter isn't any slower. In fact, it's fast. An arm ball isn't any slower. It's basically the speed at which your arm goes. But it's kind of just an outswinger, really, or a straight ball. So it's a straight ball, not as quick as anything else, and you can pick it out of the hand. Cutters are much more useful because with a cutter, what you're really doing is it doesn't matter if the ball moves off the surface. With a cutter, you're putting revolutions on the ball, so you have the chance of the ball drifting away slightly, or drifting in one direction, I should say, slightly. It's going to drop quicker, especially for people like Ngidi and Bravo, who put tons of revolutions on the ball. And it might grip and spin back. And arm ball just goes straight. So, and I don't even think you could do a proper old school arm ball. There aren't many arm balls bowled left in cricket because a batter, it's not hard for a batter to see that the spinner isn't trying to spin the ball. It doesn't work the way that it used to. What I would say with cutters is I think if you could work with seamers, and I've never done this, it might be a message for Benny Howell that I need to send him, but can you bowl an undercutter and a side cutter? Is there a way that you can do both? Because they should both react differently for batters. MF Jim says, it's a proud unit. I was shocked to hear recently that India and Pakistan, a few others, don't have a players association. We just got to answer this. But yes, is this due to the power of the BCCI or PCB, or because the diversity of players from large population countries make it harder to form one? It's just different cultures. I would say union's probably strongest in places like Australia and the West Indies and New Zealand. England has a weird one. I think it was the Manny Cohen from our Test Match Show for us always used to say that the union with the ECB ownership group was probably the only group that was less right wing than the players, and that they're so if you looked at the collective union, it might have been more right wing than the actual people that were running English cricket at any one time. But the union's definitely strong in England, but slightly different perhaps in the way that it works in England and some of the other countries. But yeah, it's a massive problem. And what it means is it's not going to be a problem for Virat Kohli or Rohit Sharma, but you get a situation where like there was collective bargaining in Australia, Cricket Australia, James Sutherland, right, was a big part of this. They were trying to sow a fraction between the women's and the men's team. And Mitchell Stark coming out and going, no, of course they should deserve paternity leave. And of course we don't have a problem with that. They're women. They get pregnant. And all those sorts of things that they were fighting for, that's what they need, right? And in a lot of those places, the money isn't going to the players, right? Like, I don't know where the money goes. I honestly don't. And again, that could be something that the players could ask for an audit. How much money is being made? What percentage are we making as players? So in Cricket Australia, I don't know what the exact percentage is now, but Cricket Australian players are the highest paid per percentage of revenue in the world. As in, I think they're at something like 48%. I don't think they're at 50% anymore, but they're certainly around 50%. Most other cricket players in the world aren't getting that. They're the ones who make the money. Right, they're the reason that there is money in the first place. So it's an issue, and it just comes from culture, right? Like unions used to be big in somewhere like America. If you were starting a professional sports league in America now, maybe the unions wouldn't be as big anymore because unions have really struggled in America over the last, you know, maybe 15 or 20 years, whereas someone like Australia that was kind of built by unions. So the first union comes in, I want to say in the mid 70s when Ian Chappell tries to strike it up, and then Tim May sort of revives it. And off the Australian union, I think all the other unions came from. And it's not a surprise because Australia's got a massive union culture. Kunal says, you mentioned on the live channel that free hit was one of your favorite innovations. Why is that? Isn't it about getting unfair advantage by not getting dismissed on two deliveries instead of only the legal one? So what it did was, Kunal, and I'd have to go back through the numbers, but it cut like 40% of no balls. No balls is shit, all right? No one wants no balls. That's not why we watch cricket. It's not enjoyable. It's not our jam, right? But before, it wasn't seen as the worst thing in the world for a bowler to commit a no ball. We've seen people try and stop this in many different ways. I think no balls have been accorded two runs before. Originally, one of the big problems we had with no balls was they weren't given to onto the bowler's figure. So people like Bob Willis was quite open, just going, I would just bowl them as much as possible. I didn't care. Now, in a T20 game or a one-day game, if you bowl a no ball, you are looking at, wait, let me work this out correctly. Two runs. So if you bowl a no ball, you can't dismiss the batter for two deliveries, and it should work out to be about 3.5 runs on average from two balls, which is massive, like way higher than the normal strike rates. So they don't want to bowl them anymore. So I think the two records that were set in one-day cricket, and I'm not as sure about this in T20 cricket, Kunal, although I know no balls went down in T20 cricket as well, but in one-day cricket, we had the first one team bowl 8,000 deliveries without no ball, and one team bowled 10,000 deliveries without no ball, and that was New Zealand and England. And I think that was after the free hits came in. Certainly England's was, and England's was the record by a long distance. So it took away no balls. That's what the penalty should be. That's the idea of the penalty. And I can't have this whole thing, oh, you can't get the batter out. Just keep your foot behind the line. They painted there, Colonel. They painted. I've seen them. At American Wicket says, why are some underrated players, who are some underrated players that we should pay attention to in the IPL? Very interested to see how Mitch Owen goes if he sneaks his way onto a roster. Just from the perspective of it didn't work in the SA20, but he's a really exciting player if it does work. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else that have come in. I haven't really started my IPL prep brilliantly at the moment. I'm trying to think if there's any other players up and coming who I haven't thought about yet. No, I have to go back through it. Interested in players like Nathan Ellis, who I think should get an expanded role. Dylan Brevis, who has flirted a little bit with it. I think Tristan Stubbs will be a lot better than he has been before. I wouldn't say that they're underrated. I'll just say that they're probably younger players coming through, right? And, you know, we're waiting for that. So sometimes the problem with Dylan Brevis was, and I tried to tell fans this, but they didn't want to hear it. And that's fine. Young fans are supposed to be excited by young players, but it's really hard to dominate the IPL when you're young, especially when you're Dylan Brevis. You just don't have the depth of experience. And so I think players like that are really fascinating. And I think we're seeing Tristan Stubbs. He's maybe a step ahead of Dylan Brevis in that he came in young, wasn't particularly good, went out, fixed his game a little bit, and has come back. So I'm quite interested in him. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anyone else. I'm sure there's hundreds, and I'm just not thinking about it. But yeah, as I said, I haven't done masses of my prep at the moment. I will have a quick break, and then we'll be back with more of Wagon Wheel.
As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year, and I loved every part of it, except for one. This little evil pin here, because I needed this to change my SIM card. And when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies, but even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, all one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Selly app and use the code GOODAREAS, all one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Selly.
Right. MF Jim says, every state except Tasmania is still eligible to qualify for the Shepherd's Hill final. Is this a good sign for the development of Australian test team? Probably a good sign for Hill cricket being quite even at the moment. I'm not sure that matters as much for the test team. Like, I can't think of a reason that that would help. I think they'd rather just people were making runs again. Neil says, over the past decade, why have most batters transitioned from the traditional bat down and crease tapping technique to holding their bat up when facing it? I think it feels better. It feels more confident. But I really think it's probably more to do with the fact that traditionally it made sense to have your bat down. The bowling wasn't as quick and you didn't play as many cut shots or ball shots. So Eddie Cowan's a player I've had the most conversation about this. And he was a very late convert to bat up and didn't want to do it and didn't like it. But he did find that when he did, he found the back foot shots much easier. I suppose that's a part of it. It's also perhaps just traditionally, it wasn't part of the coaching manual, right? So it maybe just took longer to take over, whereas maybe it should be 50% players tap and whatever. I've done it for a long time, well before. I remember SB Tang wrote a big piece saying that Mike Hussey changed everything in Australian cricket. I was playing sub-district cricket when I was, 14, 15, 16, and I got bowled on a couple of Yorkers, and Edo, our coach, just came over and said, your backlift is ridiculous. Like, you'll smash the ball, but you actually hit the ball really hard anyway. You don't need this huge extra backlift. Just control your backlift and you'll still get the power that you need while being more consistent. And that was 95, I want to say 96, when I changed. So I think by that stage, people had worked out that there are different batters who needed different things. And before that, I don't think it was the case. Sandeep says, what's stopping us from 40 over one pink ball? From 40 over one pink ball? Or is it still a Band-Aid? Or maybe rebrand it to Half Day International. I think the problem with 40 over, Sandeep, is that it's too close to T20. And I really just don't... I think it's a better format than 50 overs. And I've been saying that since I moved to the UK. So I don't disagree with that. But now T20's taken over. I just don't see how you do it. Pink ball, I don't understand why we wouldn't try the pink ball more. No one really wears pink that much. I know it might cause problems for the Royals. Actually, the Royals don't play one-day cricket anyway. Does anyone wear pink in domestic cricket? Yeah, I know South Africa occasionally do, and maybe there's some other teams who occasionally do. But Ruja says, pick up line of lefties to try a bat out four sessions in assuming of India. Oh, pick a lineup. Okay, against this bowling lineup, assuming everyone is at their peaks. Bumrah, Ishant Sharma, Ashwin, Kuldeep Yadav, Zohair Khan. What would be a better lineup? Who could you put? Graham Swan, I assume McGrath, Murali. I don't know if there's any two better left-handers. We know that for whatever reason, and it's weird because India doesn't produce a lot of left-handers, but their bowlers are brilliant two left-handers. It's really odd. I don't know how that has happened. But there might be some other specialists to left-handers I'm not thinking about. I mean, how would Flintoff be? I think there's one old player who's really brilliant against him. I'm not just talking about an off-spinner, but I do think there was one old player that would be up there as well. I remember that I came across them. Ian says, I know you're in the US this week. I hope it all went well. The NRL Super League have just hosted an event of four rugby league games in Vegas. Did they? 45,000 spectators. God. Given that there must be expats with a cricket background rather than a rugby league one, is there anywhere in Vegas that we could try a T20 extravaganza? Oh, I don't know much about Vegas sport. It's weird to me that they haven't quite managed to nail the professional leagues, because the way that you can comp tickets to people would work as well for sport as it would for Wayne Newton. Is Wayne Newton still a thing? The Blue Man Group? I don't know who plays at Vegas. I'm not a big Vegas dude. But from a cricket point of view, yeah, I could see that as well. I could see how it would work. You could also, and that might be what that rugby league thing as well, you could also kind of plan it around, you know, tour groups going out there. Like, it could all be part of it. You know, go to Vegas for a week and watch a bunch of T20s in the afternoon, and then head off and bet for the rest of your time. But yes, I would assume there's land and everything. If there's any land developers from Vegas who want to build a ground, like it shouldn't be much different than Dubai. I don't know how much it rains in Vegas, but it doesn't look like it rains a lot. Maybe we shouldn't be talking about this scene. Anil says, will Mo and Ali go down as the most fortunate and simultaneously successful bits and pieces cricketer of the past 15 years? Or is that a harsh description? I thought Darren Sammy was also a contender, but obviously not as handy and played for a weaker side. Yeah, he's an interesting one, Mo and Ali. I mean, his best delivery, this is where bits and pieces gets a little tricky. He probably should have made more runs, but they batted him in shit positions and they moved him around a bit and it got in his head. And his best delivery was an international quality delivery. I mean, Michael Braithwell's also a bits and pieces cricketer. Try to think of someone else. I mean, Marcus North was only picked because he could bowl. I think when you start to scratch the surface, you see there are probably more of them than you think. If you want the real answer, Neil, it's probably a keeper. Person McPersonface says, in the last Wagon Wheel, you mentioned the ICC squad size is unideal. What's the ideal size and why? What's stopping it being implemented? I think it was 12, then it was 13, then it was 15. It's about saving costs. That's why it's that small. No one in cricket believes that 15 is a good squad size. How many people are in the IPL squads? Like 22, 24? I would say 20 for me seems like a decent one. I just want teams to be able to pick their best players for every single game. And I don't see the point of doing it in another way. Things were very different back in the old days when it was hard to fly people around and everything else. But I think it would have been really interesting. Let's look at the England side. What if they halfway through they were like, oh, actually, what we need is a Sam Hain? Obviously, they're not going to be able to carry him in the side. Or I'm not saying this guy, but someone like David Payne or someone like that. You should be able to change your strategic options in a tournament. And 15 players really allow you to do that, right? There might have been a ground where India could have used Ravi Bishnoi or. I'm trying to think of someone even more random, but someone else as well in that, and it would have helped them. And I've seen games where it would have helped associate teams. So there's no point, Scott, and I don't know how Hamza Tahir is bowling these days, but there's no real point in Scotland going into a squad with Hamza Tahir and Mark Watt in general, because they're both left-arm finger spinners, even if they're slightly different to each other. But if you had an expanded squad, there's probably one game where it is worth bowling both of them. It's very hard to pick a player just for one game. And we've seen teams try that before and it hasn't worked. So what you end up with is a bunch of backup players who are not even as good as specialist players would be. I just don't see what the point is. 18 is the minimum I would accept. I'd probably go to 20 or 22. I've done a whole video on that person, by the way. Ruja says, what can England realistically do to stop being got over full at ODIs? It wasn't that long ago that they were the best. A couple of teams have caught up. Other teams had talent. I don't think their cricketers are as rounded, Rudra, as they used to be. I don't know how you fix that in a short term. They tried fast bowling and they tried slogging, and neither of those worked as well. I don't know. I really don't have a great answer to that. Ali says, did your opinion on one-day format change after the Champions Trophy? No. Is it salvageable or in terminal decline? I think it's still salvageable, but I don't see how it's going to work if one board or one group of boards run all three formats. I just don't see how it's going to continue. Manon says, how is the conference at MIT? When will we're recording via? I don't know about that, actually. I should ask them. I haven't even asked them for photos of it yet. I saw one of the panel members put photos up and I was like, oh, yeah, I should have asked that. Shout out to Mark Donaldson. No, it was great. I was really sick, and it was really cold in Boston. And so the Thursday night I went out, I met some really interesting people. I met some of the people behind the Texas Super Kings, the kind of American side. I met some really interesting people who worked in, I met a bunch of the basketball people, John Hollinger, Ariana, is she the head scout of the 76ers, I want to say. Dean Oliver I met very briefly as well. You know, so some people that I have grown up following or been following for a long time. Got to talk random Australian basketball with John Hollinger, which was fun. Met a bunch of other people who were involved in all the different facets of sport. So some really good, cool little conversations there. And then Friday, I had about four or five panels that I really wanted to go to, and I just wanted to check out the whole event, and I couldn't open my mouth. So that was a shame. And then Saturday, I saw the gambling one was in the morning. So was that Jeff Ma, Nate Silver, and another guy who works for Action, who I hadn't heard before, but he was really, I want to say Jeff Zerillo. That was really impressive, really interesting. I took lots of notes from that one. Then I went and saw, and I forgot the name, but I went to a workshop of someone who was talking about, you know, better ways of doing a graphic representation of data on screen. And I was like, yep, I'm in, this is great. And I was really, you know, it's the sort of stuff that we already do. So a lot of what he was saying, we do on our main channel already, but there were other things I hadn't thought about, which was brilliant. I saw the big one with Nate Silver, Daryl Morey, and Jessica at the end. So I got to meet all these different people. I got to meet Megan Rapinoe and Pablo Torre, who I've been on his podcast before. And, you know, and the cricket people were great too. You know, I don't think me and Todd ever, we were both at ESPN at the same time, but I'm not sure we ever overlapped. And now we both left ESPN, but we have these other things. So, you know, talking about Willow and how to better serve the Willow customers that he already has. And then, you know, with Jonathan, obviously, you know, with Cricket America, he's come into this very hard position. You know, I think Peter Dallapena has some comments about it online. I don't think he's the biggest fan of Jonathan, but talking to Jonathan about that and him understanding it and him having already worked with another one, it was really cool. But I don't know when the recording is out. I'm not sure. Well, actually, it will be interesting. But it's also got rugby union in as well. But it really is how you bring new sports across to America and the sort of things that you need to do. Will says, on the basketball discussion on TalkSport, do you not think the points about how it drove interest in the game are actually a bit out of date? I think interest really took a hit after the bad ODI T20 World Cups and a test side throwing away winnable series against depleted India. The last English summer may have been the most low energy one that I can remember. I don't know, man. Jeez, Will. I've covered some pretty low energy England sides. No, look, I think the thing is, if you're trying to entertain as a cricket team, well, at a certain point, you still have to win, right? Like, I think, was it the Orlando Magic a couple of years ago? Like, they're this fascinating basketball team where they've got all these, you know, really talented younger players and they play this incredible defense. But I'm not sure I think there were a lot of nerds who got really into them because of the sort of defense they played. But when they didn't really back it up with wins after a while, people just lose interest. So I do think there was a revolution. Look, talking to general cricket fans, they were really on board with basketball for a long period of time. But eventually you have to win. MF Jim says, has ever been a ball tampering scandal with sunscreen or zinc? Yeah, England used sunscreen, didn't they? I've always used zinc on my nose and lips. Huffy and Simons will always rub the leftovers onto it. Yeah, I think the Australians used to do that as well. I find it weird that zinc still exists, so I wonder if that's still happening. But yeah, sunscreen, definitely, I know of that. I'm pretty sure it was England, but maybe it was South Africa, but I know there is a team. There's certainly cricketers who have told me that they've used sunscreen before. All right, let's have a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with more of the Wag.
The scores were level. They just needed a conversation. Instead, the only time they met up was at the same end, and Australia would go on to win that World Cup. In HitWicket, you've got those game-changing special abilities at your fingertips. Need to accelerate the scoring? Bang! Activate 2x, and suddenly every boundary is worth double. That's right, a 6 becomes a 12. The opposition won't know what hit them. Or maybe you need to put the brakes on a high-scoring power play. No problem. Unleash the heck, and watch the batter struggle to even score a single run. In fact, they might even end up going backwards. It's absolute chaos. Look at the King of Spin, for example. But there's more to it than just flashy special moves. Every player has their own unique passive traits that add another layer of strategy. Gilly, for example, he's a seam hunter, a nightmare for any pace bowler. And Beefy, well, he's got a golden arm. The longer a partnership lasts, the more dangerous he becomes. HitWicket challenges you to think like a true captain. You've got to analyze your players, understand their strengths and weaknesses, and then use those abilities and traits to outwit your opponent. It is a real test of your cricketing brain. Now, if you excuse me, I've got a strategy to revise.
Sorry, ads are all over the place. Not sure if it's just me. New setup. I can't read my computer the same way. Kunal says, has seen replace swing as the primary new ball weapon in the Red Bull game? Yes, 100%. Wobble ball is why it happened, Kunal. And seam is better than swing. because I don't have any real problems with swing bowling because I could see out of the hand which direction the ball is heading. With seam, I have no clues, right? And the wobble ball takes away those clues even more and means that the ball seams for longer and all sorts of things. So, yeah, it's completely taken over. I think we will see a crop of swing bowlers do well in T20 cricket if they can swing the ball both ways. But in red ball cricket, I think it's gone. For now, until it comes back because no one can play it anymore or whatever happens next. Bloody says, which players do you know by their initials? Only GOAT players are regularly referred to by their initials, and Peter Delapan. SK Warne, Brian Charles Lara, yeah, Sachin Tendulkar. I was saying before that I've heard Hadley be called SRH before on another podcast that we did, and everyone was like, are you sure? And now I'm not sure. Traditionally, a lot of the old England players were known by their initials because they were posh and they had lots of initials. So I think probably in those days it was more common, probably less so now. Connor says, are there any professional leggies out there who have a cross-seam variation? Our Twilight leggies top wicket-taker this year was a Sri Lankan mystery spinner, and instead of rolling his fingers down the seam on release, he holds the ball across seam. That's really common. There are very few leg spinners who hold it traditionally anymore, Connor. There are reasons why you can. You get more drift if you hold it traditionally, but you give so many clues to the batter. So Rashid Khan was the first one who I saw do it all the time. But I noticed that Shahid Afridi and Anil Kumble would occasionally do it. And really from Rashid Khan onwards, I would say most leg spinners now. I wouldn't call it cross seam, although I know why you're saying it. I think they call it, I think they call it dirty seam, don't they? But they also call wobble ball that sometimes. There is a name that they use, and I've forgotten what it is, Connor. But yes, I don't think any finger spinners or wrist spinners in the world should be bowling with the traditional seam from the old coaching manuals. They're just wrong. Should remember that if I ever write my book about bowling. Sachmo says, could you use Zulu metrics to produce a fairly objective best ODI over for each country? Or would each 11 still require some subjective thinking? Yeah, Zulu metrics, the thing that we're really trying to show, and people get really upset because they'll see one metric and they'll be like, I don't believe in that metric. And we're like, well, it's okay. That's why there are 12 metrics, not one. You know, test average is really great, but I can break down some test averages for you that show that a player isn't great, right? Like, you have to look at these things in a more holistic thing. So Zulu metrics won't help you work out workload, role definition. Doesn't help you. You know, one of the big problems we have with limited overs cricket with some of the older players is what periods did they bowl in, right? Like, were they just, do they have great numbers because they bowled in the right periods of the game and all that sort of stuff? So, no, there would always need to be a lot more. But yes, it still really, really helps. All rounders is the tricky one. The big ones we're having problems with at the moment, you know, we did test batting, we did ODI batting. We're pretty happy with both of those. You know, so test batting is obviously the book, the art of batting, which is out in 9th of May, 8th of May, whichever May. That one we're pretty happy with. Like, there's still going to be problems, and you still have to be subjective. But we use metrics and knowledge and history and vision to come together with something. ODI batters, we probably did a little bit more statistically because it was just for one video. So if I was making a book out of that, I would have to go as deep as we did with test batting, which is fine. Bowlers becomes really tricky because of seam versus spin, and all-rounders really muck it up as well. That's the bit that we're having more trouble with than anything else. But we'd never use just one metric on any of these things. It's just that's we don't believe in it. You know, I was always lucky that when I got into analytics, I got into the individual metrics first rather than the big one number stuff, which most people go for. And then I talked to Nathan Lehman and he basically said the same thing to me. And I was like, great, I think I'm on the right thing. So we'll come up with more and more metrics, but we won't sort of just come up with like a one metric that tells you everything. PJ says, super overs seem to be an integral part of T20 cricket, yet they're not recorded as part of the official stats. And often you'll struggle to find who batted and bowled. Yeah. What official stats are you talking about, PJ? I would argue we don't have official stats in cricket. We have ACS. We have some leagues keep their own stats. We have Crickinfo stats. They very rarely all match up. I think that there was a problem with the formatting of Super Overs and the way that the data is being collected would be my guess. And that's probably the case, the reason why we have that sort of stuff. You also talk about a save stat added to their profile, similar to baseball pitches. I'm pretty sure in modern stuff that saves are now no longer really thought of as a great stat, but I could be wrong, PG. I haven't read a baseball book in a little while. Nadika says, would both Stokes and Shakib have had better careers if they switched teams, with Stokes forced to bat higher and Shakib allowed to bat lower down the order? I think Shakib would have a better career if he was a number six, 6-7. I think me and Kartikeya once had that conversation about him. Stokes, I don't know if he needed to bat any higher. I'm not sure he had the skill to bat all that much higher. I'm not sure he changes as much. But Shakib in a stronger team, I think he would have better numbers. I'm not sure he'd be a better player. Surab says, are we going to see more of spinners bowling in the death going forward? Cool Deep looks like he's cut for it. Yeah, I think teams have now worked it out. It's certainly something that, in the analyst community, we kind of have been pushing for. And I think teams are now starting to work it out. But bowlers have to be ready for it as well. It's very hard to do it if you spin the ball in one direction, for instance. But if you do spin it in both directions, I think that's a big part of it. And also, in the old days, it was very rare for a spinner to be bowling in the 42nd, 43rd, 44th. 45th sort of overs in ODI cricket. But with the new power play, that's a normal thing that a lot of spinners have to work out now, because that's when you have the five fielders out. That has probably helped in especially T20 death bowling and death bowling in general. Mob says, sorry if I'm missing something here, but why are some bowlers weak against the tail? Personally speaking, I hate a bowling to the top order and love cannoning into the tail enders. So the best conversation I've ever heard about this was someone who's actually good at bowling against the tail, which was Steve Harmison, who I think has a really good record against the tail. But so Kevin Peterson would come to him and say, why can't you just hit the stumps? If you just bowl the stumps, I'll be able to do it. And Steve Harmison would say, my entire career is bowling back of the length just outside of stump, right? Like, that's what I do like 70% of the time. And then 30% of the time you want me to completely change my length and completely change my line. When I do that, I'm probably going to overpitch, which means tail enders will start to knock me around. I'll slip the odd ball down the leg side, right? All these sorts of things start to happen. You don't bowl to the tail anywhere near as much as you bowl to the top order, and most top order bowlers have their general length. If you're a bowler who bowls four court behind specifically, it can be really hard bowling to the tail because they quite often just miss the ball, right? So you do have to bowl differently. And then you have some bowlers like Shoaib Akhtar, Stuart McGill, who are almost set up to bowl better to the tail than the top order. Shoaib Akhtar was still really good against the top order. Stuart McGill struggled. If you have someone like Shoaib Akhtar or Waqar Yunus, you have someone whose normal skill against the top order probably translates to the tail. If you have someone like Jimmy Anderson, I don't know if he's a good one. Josh Hazlewood used to be a really good one. Josh Hazlewood, Freddie Flintoff, Chris Martin, three guys that you watch them against top order players and they were just brilliant. They couldn't always pull it back against the tail in the same way. And because of that, their records weren't, you know, I would say it stops Hazlewood being an automatic all-time great, although last couple of years he's made another play for that. And with Flintoff and Martin, they ended up with much worse bowling averages than they should have just because they didn't feast on the tail, right? Like, they both should have averaged under 30 in Test cricket. So maybe what you also have with those guys is more one-dimensional kind of bowling. They are very good at the thing that they do, and they're probably beating the tail over and over again, but they're just not dismissing them would be another potential. Adityan says, you're talking about how spinners do not bowl at 120Ks if they're breaking their wrist. And the Narayans and Akilasans are not really imparting much spin sideways. Do you think there is a case for these slider bowlers to consistently be able to bowl at that damn mousely pace and still get the swing that they want? Yeah, I think we'll see probably Dan Mousley's slightly different than those guys, but I think we will see some sort of a hybrid opening bowler that will be able to bowl swing and spin between 100, maybe 90 kilometers an hour and 128 kilometers an hour. I think generally, Adityan, if you can bowl over 135 kilometers an hour or 140 kilometers an hour, you probably just bowl seam. You know, we don't get many bowlers who bowl spin at a professional level and then change the theme, whereas you do get a few more guys going in the other direction, especially, you know, people like Michael Beer, Ashley Giles, was Paul Harris another one? Who just aren't quick enough. And so they take the spin and then they get really good at spin. And the one that I can think of is Colin Miller, of course. And he wasn't particularly quick. He's a seam bowler, so he probably wasn't losing all that much. But yes, I think there's certainly an element of that there that plays a part. But yes, I do think I really think we will have more hybrids in multiple different ways going ahead. I still don't understand why the knuckleball isn't used more by finger spinners. I'm not sure why wrist spinners haven't tried knuckleball. Having the ability to swing the ball, right? Spinners who can bowl Yorkers, fast bowlers who can bowl proper off-spinning or leg-spinning delivery at times. I think there's a lot more variation that we can have between spin and pace. We have separated them in our minds. They were not separated up until 1920, really. Like, you did have people who just bowled spin and just bowled pace, but there were heaps of other bowlers. We still don't know if they were really spinners. It's not just Sid Barnes. There's heaps of them. There's a South African one, and I have had fights with people on both sides about whether this guy was a leg spinner or a seamer. My guess is he probably just bowled both. Will says, oh, my God. Will, what are you... How on earth do you think I'm going to read this? I don't know how to answer a question like this, Will, when you put so much information in, man. I'm sorry. These are probably better said for the Q&As when we do on Patreon. Sorry. It would take me forever to work this out. Because you're also assuming in this, Will, I'm going to remember what your question was and what my answer was. I'm not. Josh says, trying to come up with the ultimate all-format team. What is the following team's best and worst format? And what changes do you make? Warner, Rohit, Kohli, Tendulkar, Viv, AB de Vries, Afridi, Stark, Murali, Bumrah, Garner, McGrath. I would assume that team is best at ODI cricket off the top of my head, Josh, by the look of that. Feels like an ODI team to me because you've got Warner and Rohit who are fine to open in that. You've got Kohli and Tendulkar, Viv and AB de Vries. Afridi is probably a better 50-over player than any other format, certainly until late in his career with T20. Stark said he's best in that format. I would say Murali's a better ODI bowler than he is a test bowler, although there's not much in that. Bumrah doesn't really matter. Garner and McGrath, doesn't matter as much either. Sandeep says, I'm back into watching cricket after a 10-year break. What? Having played and watched as a teenager before, but now I want to understand the modern game better. Can you recommend some books to provide insights into current strategies and tactics? Like how a spinner uses field placements. I'm not sure we have great books on this. I suppose you would want Cricket 2.0, which is Wigmore and Wild. That's a really good one for kind of as it's starting. You've got Hitting Against the Spin, which is Lehman and, oh my God, why have I, Ben Jones. I'm not sure there's many others. Those are kind of them. If you go to Test Cricket, my book, Sandy, you get an evolution of the entire game of cricket. And my new book, Art of Batting, is a bit like that as well. So it has elements of that. I think it was me and Wigmore that we're going to write Cricket 2.0. But I'd written a bunch of books in a row and I wasn't quite ready for it. Things are moving so quickly. I'm not sure there's a book. You know, if you follow my stuff, if you follow Ashwin's stuff, I don't know, it's especially stuff he speaks in English. I'm not sure what languages you speak. Myself and Ashwin are really good at it. Jack at the Cricket Podcast is quite good at talking about these sorts of things. Sid Monger doesn't miss many either. So those are the sorts of people that you're looking for. There's a real, and then you've got, you know, Muhammad Khan and Kartikeya and Jimenesh and all these people. People are picking up stuff all the time. I don't think there's a repository in the way that Cricket Info probably was 10 years ago. Satchmo says, who are the best three ODI players of all time who are not very good at test players? Bevan, yeah, is a good one. Where would you have Nathan Bracken in that list, Satchmo? The two Australians. Not very good at test cricket. You've got people like Neil Fairbrother. I'm not sure how good he is, though, and whether he's quite at the top. I feel like there's an all-rounder I'm missing in this list. I wonder what Kluivert's record is in test cricket. Because I know he bowled some good spells, but I never saw him as a really great fourth bowler. So him and Callith kind of shared 4.5 there. He made some runs, obviously, but again, I don't remember him being incredible in that. But yeah, I'm not sure. It's a good question. Off the top of my head, I'd almost have to go through and work out who the best ODI players were and work backwards from there. MF Jim says, you mentioned match fixing in the sense of set fixtures in the ICC tournaments. Could you elaborate further on this? Every single tournament, we know that India is going to play Pakistan, and about 90% of the time, Australia is going to play England. Do you think that's because of how the seedings work? We are rigging the fixtures in a way that professional sport should not do. I've been saying it for years. This is the thing. One day, it's a bit like when we used to talk about conflicts of interest within cricket, and people would laugh at me. And then the Supreme Court came along, and it wasn't as funny anymore. Again, this is the sort of thing. One day, we're going to look back and go, what? Did we have to do that? I would argue no, but ICC decided differently. Neil says, watching the Champions Trophy, and I was trying to figure out why exactly I find ODIs boring, whereas tests and high-stake T20s are gripping. What do you think? I must admit that only watch the ICC tournaments. This is still largely because of the middle overs limbo. Yes, it's for me, it's the 10 to 40 over period, which is why I thought the 40 over format was better, because you didn't get that same lag. For me, it's always been that. It's not as bad as it used to be, Neil. I would say ODI cricket's far more entertaining now than it was when people used to love it. I would say in the 90s and 2000s, we had so many times when teams weren't even, I don't even think teams were trying that hard. Manny Cohen used to call it the agreed upon single, where both teams basically just went, yeah, you can get a single. It's fine. No one's going to try and stop you from getting a single, and I'm not going to try and hit a boundary. ODI cricket, I just think ODI cricket's much more entertaining now. It's just that there's another format that's even more entertaining. Aditya says, a couple of days back, you had mentioned Kuldeep is not the same strike bowler he was before he became a defensive bowler. Hilariously, he kept striking in the New Zealand file right after you talked about him. It wasn't right after I talked about him. I've been talking about it for about 2 months, Aditya. He had to eventually get wickets. Are there other fun stories where you came up with a really great insight and the next game, by a freak occurrence of nature, the exact opposite happened? See, I wouldn't count that one. Daryl Mitchell is the one from this World Cup. From this Champions Trophy that I would count, because I was like, I'm not even sure they should pick Daryl Mitchell anymore. He just looked out of form to me. And, I mean, you could argue he was still out of form, but he made 100 runs in the semi and final, I think. Actually, he didn't look out of form in the semi-final. He definitely looked out of form in the final. It happens all the time. It's a normal thing. I think there's this element, especially with cricket writing, with sports writing in general, where, like, sometimes someone will say to me, oh, I don't like Gideon Haigh, he got this thing wrong. It's like, are you expecting Gideon Haigh to predict the future? Because if you are, then you don't understand sports writing to begin with. The idea is to show that there is an issue here. And sometimes you do predict the future, right? Like, sometimes you get things right and sometimes you get them wrong. You can't be a sports writer if you don't do this. And if you were to put down every one of your most cherished friends' opinions on cricket, you would see that they are probably wrong more than any cricket writer. And if they're not, they probably should be a cricket writer or a sports writer. And even then, it's not really what the job is, right? Like, I'm only trying to be right 55 to 60% of the time. If we could work out what was coming next, we wouldn't watch it. It would be boring, right? Like, that's the whole thing. It happens all the time. Will says, in light of the FIFA World Cup potentially going to 64 teams. Jesus, I didn't know that. What's the highest number of teams that you think we'd be happy to see in a T20 World Cup? 64 teams. I mean, what if we're not aiming to be on the same level as football, what are we doing here? I'm happy with 16. I'm happy with 24. I'm happy with 32. We're not quite ready for 32 at the moment. We're not far off 24. It wasn't that long ago that teams 10 through to 18 were just not up to it. It's just not the case anymore, right? It's just not where we are. So if we keep developing the sport, we should eventually have that. PG says, what were the reasons behind Durham becoming the 18th first-class county, particularly 70 years after Glamorgan? If the ECB put you in charge of awarding first-class status to three minor counties to make three leagues of seven, how would you go about selecting them? You're really assuming I know anything about minor counties, like, as a general rule. I only know about the counties because they play professional cricket. I think Durham was just, there were so many strong cricketers coming through and they were being fed through to other sides that there was a feeling that eventually they had earned the right to have their own side. they still have their own issues, but they've had international cricket and they've certainly still produced great, you know, a good crop of players. Cricket's really big up there, right? And it's, so it makes sense. Devon and Staffordshire are the only two that I've really heard of. There's a reason why Staffordshire might struggle, and it's, I think it's to do with other counties around it, and it's maybe not quite as strong as it once was. But Devon is the other one that I've heard mentioned. I don't think we'll ever have another county team. I think Durham is going to be the last one. I could be wrong. I'm not an expert on this, but if you were to ask the over-unders, I would say 150 that we never have another county team again, and I don't know, 270, 280 that we do would be my guess off the top of my head. All right. I think we've already taken some ads, so let's do some super chats here. Sandcup says, video tour of the new studio. When it's up, it's not, it looks more professional than it probably should at the moment, Sandcup, but I haven't even plugged everything in. We've got, the blackboard is coming. I've got to do a bunch of whiteboard stuff around here. I don't even know what we're going to put behind us here. So there's a few different things that we need to fix. And I haven't built the other end of the studio yet. But when it's done, I will definitely do something. There won't be any issue there. Genius has done the thing where you put them in separately and they're impossible to find, hasn't he? It's very hard when I'm on my own, mate. He says, I'm now a Lakers fan. Why? The NBA thing is fun. I like this a lot. Curious, though. Any way for me to learn more about this sport after this? Yeah, there's hundreds of writers. It depends on what level that you want to go to. John Hollinger, Caitlin Cooper, really good, but you might get completely lost. If you want something fun, Basketball Illuminati is a really good podcast to go in with. With the Lakers, there'll probably be about three or four podcasts about the Lakers. I'd probably start with my team, and then when they start to say, you know, split action or, you know, rejecting the screen and stuff, maybe that's when you go to the other experts. But I would start with my team first, I think, if I was doing it that way. I'm trying to relearn leg spin after I see a 10-year video of Shane Warne. Leg spin, top spinner, all seem fine to me, but the wrong end feels so hard. Anyhow, it's basically you just want to do it so that the back of your hand is facing the batter. That's all you need to do. I mean, if you want a good wrong end, that's not all you have to do, but that's all you need to do. It's like it's basically a back of the hand slower ball, right? So if the back of your hand is facing the batter when you release the ball, it will at the very least come out like a top spinner, but it will probably at least fade back in. And if you really flick it out, it will go in the other direction. Shrikant, thank you for the generous super chat. What's 1953 Ashes ball by ball where Limit was bowling at leg start with three leg zips? What were they thinking? Why weren't batters able to work them to leg all day? Because they had three leg slips. You can't do it with three leg slips. So if you go back, this it was killing cricket because people were just bowling down the leg side on purpose, Shrikant. You can't control the ball on the leg side the way you can on the offside, right? Because it's outside of your eye line. You know, it's behind your body. So originally that was what body line was. Then the off spinner started doing it. Then the in-swing bowler started doing it. It's boring, repetitive cricket. It's not as exciting. It does. If you bowl outside off stump, you can still hit to the leg side. If you bowl down the leg side, you can't hit to the offside anymore, right? Like it's almost impossible to do that. And you can't control the ball off the face of your bat. Even Steve Smith struggled when there was like a leg slip in place or a leg gully in place at times. And that's one guy. They were doing it with heaps of them. Yeah, not for me. Very, very ordinary version of cricket for mine. Oh, God, Sandcup. Oh, Sandcup, I might not be able to see yours. Sorry, it hasn't come up. But thank you for the super chat and whatever you said. Dega says, what skills would you look at in an ODI player and decide are transferable to tests? What would make you decide an ODI player would be good in tests? Is in a batter, it's literally if they're not going out, if they're not edging a lot, right? So I remember with Owen Morgan off the top of my head, he was just a player. I was just like, he edges a lot. I just don't see how this transfers to tests. So I get seam bowling if you're not edging the ball a lot, because there's going to be a lot of people standing over there would be the main thing I'd be looking for. In seam bowling, you're just looking for repeatability, right? Like, can they get sideways movement out of the ball and put it in the right spot over and over again at a decent pace? That's kind of all you're looking at there, and you're not worried about the slow balls and everything else. And with a spinner, you're looking at a stock ball that can control the game, but also can take wickets. That's probably the main thing that you're looking for. And he says, as a putter runner enthusiast, how concerned are you about his change of bowling action and bad returns in his A20? Yeah, I'm a little worried. He looked like he was on course to be the next great bowler and in white ball cricket. And yeah, I'm a little concerned. But when you change your technique, sometimes you get worse before you get better as well. What's Rashan Ravindra's T20 upside? He can score quickly against pace and spin. He's potentially, a 145 strike rate, 40 average type guy, which is pretty good, right? With a little bit of bowling and can field. Jack says, ideal 2027 World Cup groups by ICC. Group 1, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Zimbabwe, Scotland, Namibia, Dutch. Group 2, South Africa, England, Australia, New Zealand, Afghanistan, West Indies. I got it back on. Just followed the last 6-7 years pattern. Yeah, if I'm Afghanistan, I'm happy with that. And if I am Bangladesh, I'd want to change over. But yeah, that could be it if you're looking at the patterns. And as I said before, not sure we should have patterns. No, well, I'm very sure we shouldn't. Ikat says, if peak bowler faced bowling in conditions similar to the last ball to Gavaskar, how do you think he would have gone? I still think he'd struggle. If Bolan knew where to bowl to him, I think he would struggle. I don't think that would change all that much. He can't, again, former players often get prescriptive with their analysis, especially on cost. Prescriptive? How often do they strike a judge between being informative and judgmental? Players have a lot of trouble explaining what they did on the field and what people do on the field because they instantly get it and they have a shorthand with each other. And so it's easier just to go, he's disappointing, than it is to explain why the thing has happened to them. In some cases, you know, you have some great athletes who are not particularly good at all at explaining what they did, right? They need other people to do it for them. It's not the same. And so we shouldn't just keep picking former players all the time. Laughing at Nothing says, with the T20 World Cup having 20 teams now, how much further do you think it can be expanded? Like 48 teams. Someone said 48, someone else said 64 before. While not having too many one-sided matches. You just keep expanding it, Laughing at Nothing, as teams get better. The best way of doing it. Teams are getting better, and the more chances they have of going to the World Cup, the more teams will get better. That's all you have to do. Oh. Sorg says, how do you work so much? I feel like I haven't done anything for like 3 days. Although I suppose I started setting up the studio today. Please give tips on how to be more productive and driven in life. I think being on the spectrum helps, Sega. How do I make my default in life work instead of rest? I don't know. It sounds like you're having a better life than me. I come from a family of people who are just work a lot, and it was just ingrained in me. At a young age, you can't always be more talented than people, but you can work harder than them, and you can control that. I don't know if you can, but that was how it was trained to me. My mum, at one stage, had a full-time job. She ran a theater company. She ran like a library thing as well. And then afterwards she traded the theater company in for a tennis club. My dad, had a full-time job and also looked after a cricket club for years as well. And then also had some part-time jobs that he would take up on the side. Like, it's just clearly both of my parents are like that. And so it's natural for me. Also, I love writing. I wrote every day of my life when I had a normal day job as well, right? Like, so for me, it's creating stuff and making stuff and talking is not as hard, you know? I don't think I was seen as a particularly hard worker in some other jobs I've had. Some I were. I remember when I worked for Qantas, I had this incredible ratio of taking phone calls, and I was still seen as someone who didn't work that hard, partly because I was just much more efficient than everyone else, and that I would probably rest more than other people, but I could take 5 calls in the time it would take someone else to take 1. So I could take 150 calls in a day working for Qantas, where if anyone else got to 100, they would throw a party. But I'm not sure I was working harder. I was just more efficient. And I think that's probably it. A lot of what I do, I'm very efficient at it. And I'm not very talented in many things either, Sega. So I don't know if any of that has helped you. Noel says, your opinions on Umesh Yadav, the test bowler. I really like late career Umesh Yadav. I've said before, I think they kind of him and Ishant, they moved on from a little bit too quickly, especially bowling in India. I thought he was a fantastic bowler. Bart 881 says, thank you for everything you do. Oh, thank you, Bart. I would love to see you collaborate with someone like Bill Simmons to explore storytelling nuances across sports. Look, you know, going to an event like, I don't know, he's not going to go to Sloan, but, or I don't think he goes to Sloan, but going to an event like Sloan is, that's the first step of all that sort of stuff, right? You know, me and Pablo Torre have already worked together once. I think we'd like to do it again. I'm not sure who else, but there are probably other people as well that, you know, that we could reach out and do that. I'm more than interested in that. You know, I think the future of our channel will always be cricket, but we are planning and doing more stuff that isn't just cricket as well. Cricket, I kind of feel that cricket is just the, it just became the thing that I did rather than anything else. But thank you. Sam Carl, your position on the toss, luck part of the game or unfair? Something needs to be done. What can be done for the latter? It's hard with World Cups. A big problem is due, right? Like, and conditions. Maybe we should fix those sorts of things first, Sam Carl. But for bilateral games, I still think that the visiting team should be able to choose what they want to do first. Supriyo says, do you think the support of KKR is similar to support for football clubs in Europe? No, I don't think the IPL's quite got to that level yet. It's hard because you've got, when you've got a football club, you've got your kids, your grandkids, and your parents. If I got that right? Well, your generations above you and generations below you at all times are probably also as invested in it as you are. That isn't the case of the IPL, right? So that bit is going to take time. There's plenty of fanaticism in some of those fan bases. There's a couple of others where it doesn't feel like there's a lot of fanaticism as well. So there's certainly plenty more things to do. Oh, God, another one where I have to find it. Scene uploader. Where are we? Stain suggested using only one of the two balls in ODIs after 34th over to bring back reverse swing. Can a 28-over ball reverse? Balls reverse in T20 cricket. I don't know about this because I've seen balls reverse in T20 cricket before. So I'm a little bit put off. It isn't just the fact that we're using two balls. It should be able to reverse after 25 overs. Umpires are telling players not to throw the ball in on the ground anymore. That's one reason we're not getting reverse. We can't do the old trick of lumping saliva on one side of the ball, which would sometimes help it as well. And players are terrified of getting caught doing stuff. And the ball wobbles for longer than it swings. And so teams are starting to prepare it later. I don't know. I think people have got very invested in it. As I said, I think one day cricket is better now than it used to be. So I don't see why we need to go back to that. But that's just me. Mike says, what's the best data source to analyze test batting averages over the last 30 years? The book is called The Art of Batting. I know I might have done this already. You might have done this already, but I'd like to try it myself. You can use Varanet's got the match ratios and error ratio stuff, which is up. Cricksheets has a lot of stuff available. I'm not sure it's quite the last 30 years, though, Mark. It might be the last 25-ish years. But yeah, those are the places that I would probably start. And Cricksheet is, you know, all the data that they have. I don't know if they have everything, Cricksheet, but they certainly have a lot. I feel like I missed one. No, I got the scene uploader and I got mine. We're done. Thank you very much again for coming on. We will continue to fix the studio until it is a studio and we will work it out from there. But thank you to everyone for supporting us and backing us. And that's why it's with your support that we can build a studio where we have three different places that we can film and record stuff and do everything else. And so in the future, we'll have a proper podcast studio in the corner so that we can get people in. Right. You know, we might start doing that with Andy Zaltzman, right? You know, just get him in and do stuff that way. You know, Mr. Plant and the sports owner. We will still do stuff behind us because, look, I can get around. But there's not a lot of room between me and the wall at the moment. But don't worry. There'll be more. This isn't it. This isn't the end game. I'm not going to be recording in front of a wooden panel. For one reason, it echoes. But thank you very much to everyone. And we'll see you again very, very soon.
thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make any content, Minvo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minvo.pro now.